up? This is Movies On Up, The Graceful Dead. My graceful co-host seated across from me, as always, Mr. Dave Becella.
Alive and well.
Alive and well. That's well, Mr. Dave.
Alive.
Alive. You're going to be unwell if you hit that microphone stand one more time. 30 seconds in,
boop.
We already got him once.
Boop.
That's Dave. That's Dave's mic stand. I am Ryan. We are Movies On Up. The Graceful Dead is our tagline for this week. If you think you know what movie that belongs to, send your guess to us in one of the three following ways. You can email it to us, moviesonup@gmail.com. You can leave it on the Facebook page, facebook.com/moviesonup, or you can tweet your guess directly at us on the Twitter, @moviesonup. If you are correct and if we choose you, we will betroth you with a very special Movies On Up prize package. It'll be full of all sorts of fun things. Movies, VHS tapes.
Buttons.
And buttons, yeah. Those are the kind of fun things that are in those. So if those are things that appeal to you, all you need do is tell us what movie the tagline The Graceful Dead comes from. And if you're correct, there you go. It's just that simple. This week is just that simple. Kubo and the Two Strings comes out. We'd done an episode not too long ago, Charlize Theron, where we learned a lot of things, some about her mother and a father. We also learned that she would be in this movie, Kubo and the Two Strings. That idea was already out because we'd already done it. So Dave dug a little bit deeper.
Already done a Michael Keaton episode.
Yeah, so we were really running on fumes. So we decided to do Coraline, which is a movie put out by the same studio. It's doing Kubo. And we both like Coraline.
Yeah, it was Coraline or Paranorman, and I think we've talked about Paranorman quite a bit. So
yeah,
we went Coraline because I don't think it doesn't come up as much as Paranorman. I know we both like Paranorman a little bit more.
Sure.
A lot more.
For obvious reasons.
Anna Kendrick.
That's the obvious reason.
Yeah, but it's also more fun.
Yeah.
But yeah, so we're Coraline.
Decent flick, and again, maybe this one, I'm going to say it flew under the radar, but maybe not necessarily. From 2009.
I think it's right where it needs to be on the radar.
Directed by Henry Selick. It's dead where it needs to be. No pun intended, and we'll get to that in a minute. Starring Dakota Fanning, Terry Hatcher, Keith David, John Hodgman, a bunch of folks. For a relatively small cast, Ian McShane shows up. It's a pretty talented group of people. It opened February 6th of 2009, number 3 in the box office with $16.8 million, ahead of such luminaries as The Pink Panther 2 and Paul Blart.
Mall the Cop. First Paul
The
Blart.
First, yes. Long before Paul Blart 2 was a thing, there was Paul Blart 1, and this movie performed.
What was it? Give me a clue on the first top movie that week, top two movies that weekend.
The one of them spawned a franchise.
Fast and Furious. It's the Rock one?
No, it's not. Starring a man with a very specific set of skills.
Oh, Taken.
Taken, indeed. And the second one, long title. I'm just not into giving you a hint.
Thanks
on
for
this
everything,
one.
Julie Newmar.
No, it was not To Wong Fu. It was He's Just Not That Into You.
Oh, yeah.
Those were your top two. Coraline right there in the center. The movie went on to gross just over $75 million domestically, which puts it 938. On the all-time list. Care to take a blind guess as to the music biopic it ranks just behind?
Walk Hard?
No. Take a blind guess.
It's not Ray.
It is Ray.
Ray didn't make that much money?
Ray made slightly more than $75 million.
Really?
Yes, it did. One place down on the list, a 1993 movie directed by Henry Selick.
Christmas, yeah.
It is. Tim Burton's A Nightmare Before Christmas. It would lead you to believe that Tim Burton directed the film. He did not.
Outside of the top...
Henry Selick did.
Outside of the top 15 or 20 films, I wonder how often that happens in like the overall rankings of
that
movies.
One director has back-to-back?
Yeah. Because what are the chances? What is this, 963 and 964?
It would have been 900 and... 938 and 939.
That's fascinating.
Yes.
To me.
And like, it's not
that's consistency.
Yeah. The movies are separated. They're separated by such an amount of time that we're talking $1993 dollars and we're talking $2009 dollars. But yeah, what are the odds that both movies would make about $75 million each? I mean, there's a little bit here and there difference, but not very much. Just to kind of put it in context, we talked about the studio that's releasing Kubo and the Two Strings. It's Leica Entertainment. Paranorman was a possibility. Other possibilities recently, The Box Trolls and Corpse Bride. I was curious. I have it in my head that Paranorman was this really big success.
No, for us it was.
Yeah, it was not. If you look at those four movies, the three that I just mentioned in Coraline far and away was the most successful of them. The Box Trolls grossed just over $50 million.
See, was that last year or the year before? That was 2014,
right? The Box
Trolls,
I think, was 2 years ago, yeah. Paranorman was at $56 million, and The Corpse Bride was $53 million. So you're talking about $20 million, give or take, between Coraline and the next most successful.
And throw in Nightmare Before Christmas is the second most successful.
Well, from that director.
Yeah.
Not from that company, though.
Oh, Nightmare Before Christmas wasn't like it either? Okay.
No, it wasn't.
He started it after?
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah, they only have four. There was another one. I think it was called Moon Girl. Very small movie that I couldn't find any information on, so I just kind of skipped it. And just stuck with the ones that I think people would know. Certainly, we talked a lot about The Box Trolls when that was coming out. We've talked a lot about Paranorman, and Corpse Bride is a thing that I think people know.
But, I mean, Laika is... I mean, people may not know Laika Studios, but you see Kubo in the Two Strings trailer, and it's like, you instantly think, oh, Coraline, Paranorman,
exactly.
Box Trolls.
They
it's
have...
like, what is it, Ardent? What's the studio in... UK that does like Shaun the Sheep and Pirates, Band of
Waltz and Gromit.
Yeah,
yeah.
They have that style.
Right. I mean, when people see...
It's a brand.
Yeah, when people see... It's a lesser-known brand, but you know, if you see WALL-E or you see Inside Out, you can pretty easily tell, oh, that is a Pixar
movie.
Disney and
Disney-Pixar are becoming harder and harder to distinguish.
Well,
but.
Sure, yeah. But I mean, they have like a brand. That's a great way to put it. I think it's kind of interesting that specifically nowadays, people tend to shit on Hollywood for recycling the same crap, and a lot of it they do bring on themselves. You get your sequels, your reboots, option books or comics, but Laika has some really unique stuff. To use the Pixar analogy again, if they're like the most popular kid in school, and it's tough to argue that they're not the best when it comes to animated movies, that Laika would be like the goth kid that sits alone at lunch. They'd be really kind of interesting if you just take the time to go hang out with them. Certainly a little offbeat. And all of those movies, whether it's The Box Trolls or Paranorman or The Corpse Bride, seem to have a little bit of a, for lack of a better word, like a horror tinge to them. And that's certainly the case with Coraline.
Yeah, and I think that's, I mean, screw it, we'll get to Coraline, but and it'll might lead into it, is I don't know that Laika, it's not that they don't know their audience, I don't think they care. They're not out to make kids' movies. The Corpse Bride was not a kids' movie.
You're right.
Paranorman was the closer.
Kids movie,
it was more mainstream. It was more catered as a kids' horror movie.
Right.
Kubo looks like it's a kids' action movie.
Adventure
like
movie,
it looks
right.
like it has jokes and stuff.
That one seems like it's the farthest apart.
Where that's where Coraline. Who's the audience here? Because I love Neil Gaiman. Neil Gaiman
right.
is one of my.
Oh, we're gonna get to that.
Yeah, one of my favorite authors. So you have a Neil Gaiman book, he's a fantastic author, but not, my kids aren't rushing out to read Neil Gaiman stuff. You have this studio that's not really appealing to adults on their own unless you know about it. Like, for just the random adult seeing it, it looks like a kid's movie. But is it a kid's movie?
It's not a kid's movie, and I had to struggle to not call it that.
My kids watched it with me last night. They wanted right. to watch it again this morning, and they put it on themselves. But
is that what was on there when we came upstairs?
No, oh. I put on Teen Titans versus Justice League.
Okay.
But they watched Coraline last night with me when I rewatched it, and then they watched it again this morning when I was doing other stuff. They're fascinated by the look of it. Mm-hmm. It did freak them out. And, I mean, I let my kids watch anything. They've watched horror movies. They love
right.
zombies. Talia's one of her favorite movies is Zombievers. but, like, Coraline kind of freaked them out. And I think because it is... It's creepy. Stuff like this is scarier than zombies and stuff.
Right.
Like, because it feels more grounded. And it's just such a weird story because an 8, 9, 10-year-old girl or boy can relate with the feelings that Coraline's going through. And that, like, oh, I wish I had a different family. And then, oh, there's this other family that's kind of perfect other than the fact that they want to steal you forever. It's just such a weird movie. And
it's very
ambitious.
It has a good message for kids. Hey, you might think
but
your parents
delivery
are awful,
method,
but yeah, the delivery is interesting. I mean, this was their most successful of those movies, and it's the one that seems like it would be the
See,
hardest.
That shocks me. Like, I really thought
me too.
Paranorman
That's why I wanted
was
to look.
The bigger, and it was the least.
Yeah, it's because, you know, we gave all our money to that movie, and I waited to
it
see.
It was Oscar nominated. I don't think Coraline was. Well, this might
did
predate the Oscars?
predate the Oscars?
The animated.
The
Oscar.
Animated. It wasn't nominated for best animated film. It was nominated for, I think, like some kind of visual type deal. I do believe. I could be wrong on that. But in terms of who is the audience for these movies, I think that they're just making really interesting stories. I guess you would say Paranorman and maybe even Box Trolls, they have like horror-esque kind of elements that you're okay with letting your kids see because it's not gory, and I guess you wouldn't feel irresponsible showing it to
them.
They're
like the Guillermo del Toro of kids movies,
oh, we'll get
I guess.
To that too, yeah.
Where they're like, me and Ryan did not discuss any of this ahead of time.
These
like,
comparisons, they're very...
They're there.
Yeah.
Like anything Guillermo del Toro makes feels like a horror movie. We've talked about
right.
that. Like a movies, no matter what the subject, it's not that they're reaching far. They're not
right.
making Wall-E feel like a horror movie.
Yes.
Their movies are darker in tone. Even Kubo. Kubo looks like a fun action fantasy adventure movie, but you can still tell there's elements of death and the supernatural in it. So they know what they're doing, and they stick. They're good at what they do. I'm interested on budget. Are you looking at budget at all on any? What's the average budget for one of these movies?
I didn't look. I can try and look it up while we're going, or you can look it up while I talk about Neil Gaiman for a little bit. Gaiman, if you're not familiar with him, wrote Sandman, which was a hugely popular comic series from the early to mid '90s. One of Dave's favorites, and if I didn't mention it, I'm sure he would. Later on in the 90s, he wrote a little book called Stardust, which may have been adapted into a pretty fair movie as well that we may have mentioned once or twice.
We
so,
still need to do an episode on.
Yeah, we got the we did an episode on a Neil Gaiman book, and it was Coraline and not Stardust. I would not have put a lot of money on that a couple of years ago. Taking a property from a guy that's not really a children's author, but a guy that's been very, very successful and wanting to turn that into a movie, I think kind of shows maybe what the studio is interested in doing. They're interested in finding cool stories, and whoever it appeals to, that's fine. If it does appeal to more kids, great. If it's parents that bring their kids, if it's teenagers, you know, they don't really care. Obviously, they're out to make money, but it's not quote-unquote as commercialized. They want to tell good stories and expect that people will go pay to see them, which I think is kind of noble, I guess, in today's day and age.
Yeah, and to kind of back that up, I was researching while you were talking, and they average about $60 million for the budget. Coraline, Box Trolls, Paranorman all had that $60 million budget. Kubo, it's not listed yet, but I'm willing to bet that it was made for about $60 million, and you're talking these movies are making $50 to $75
so domestically, yeah.
They're not raking in the money. Like, they're making enough to turn a profit and enough to keep the lights on to maybe make the next one, but they haven't had that massive, massive hit, but they're making them relatively cheaply enough. Kubo seems to be the one that's marketed the most.
Yeah.
I don't remember this kind of marketing for Coraline or Box Trolls.
I don't remember it for Box Trolls, but I do remember seeing stuff for the other two.
Like, I just don't think like this one. I'm seeing Kubo everywhere.
Yeah. Well, yeah. I think you mentioned it earlier that it's kind of creepy. Like, your kids aren't creeped out necessarily by, like, zombievers, but this movie creeped them out. And I think that has a little bit to do with stop motion. Almost every time that stop motion's used, it's creepy. I think it gives the characters like this sort of unnatural motion where it's sort of herky jerky, which I think was great for the other mother and the other father. Stylistically, I think it sort of accentuates the weirdness of the characters as well. An animated cat like the Cheshire Cat from Alice in Wonderland, not really that creepy. But the cat in this movie, creepy as hell. And that's not even to really mention the Beldum creature with the needle fingers or whatever the hell she had going on. But the stop motion in and of itself, I think, is pretty creepy. And I can't imagine this movie being done a different way. The Selleck had a really nice run about the same time as Sandman was popular. He directed that Nightmare in 1993, James and the Giant Peach in 96, Monkey Bone in 2001, which was kind of a departure.
Brendan Fraser.
Yeah. But then he came back to the stop motion genre for Coraline. Hasn't really done much since then, which is a bit of a shame.
Yeah, Coraline was his last bullet, right?
Yeah, I do believe so. His vision and the world building he did in Nightmare and in this, I think, fits so wonderfully with both of those movies that I couldn't really imagine Coraline, after having seen it, I couldn't imagine it just, you know, like a 2D animated style or a live action Nightmare Before Christmas, I can't see those things.
I could see it as a Del Toro movie. I truly could.
He would be the closest guy to be able to do a live action of that. But even Del Toro, it's not his next movie, but he's been talking about doing that Pinocchio movie for a long time, and that's supposed to be stop motion. So I can't imagine a Del Toro stop motion. That's going to scare the shit out of everyone.
Especially a wooden thing, this wooden creature that wants to be a boy.
Wooden creature. No. It's probably the first time in history that Pinocchio has been referred to as a creature.
I call it for what it is.
Well, yeah, and especially in the hands of that madman, where everything he does has that horror tinge to it. And if you put stop motion, which works so wonderfully for creatures specifically, I mean, stop motion people, I was not creeped out by Coraline, even like the amazing Babinski and the two ladies that live below. I mean, they all had very unique looks to them, very stylized looks, but I didn't think any of them were particularly scary. But yeah, holy smokes. It's just something about seeing like buttons for people's eyes. It's a very simple thing, but I thought it was really effective.
And I like Selleck's blend, his ability to blend. He did it in Nightmare. He did it in this, of music in this world, to where it's not a music. I guess Nightmare would be closer to
a
musical.
Yeah, that's much more of a musical.
They're not musicals by the traditional sense, but like there are a few musical numbers in this that kind of come out of nowhere, but they work. Like they kind of,
yeah,
they
I mean
work.
the scene with the other father getting played by the piano, yeah, John Hodgman. I did not put that together until I just looked at the cast.
Yeah,
it's like holy smokes,
it's a unique movie. I don't know that I love it. Like, I'll speak highly of Paranorman. I did not like the Box Trolls. This would be in between them. I didn't dislike it, but I'm not raving about it.
I remember having relatively low expectations for this at the time I first saw it, and I ended up liking it a lot more the first time than I did on the second viewing.
See, I watched it when it came out. So I saw it in 2009, and then I watched it last night. So
I probably saw it in 2010, maybe when it came out on DVD or whatever. Visually, it still looks really, really cool. That might have been the part that had surprised me the first time I saw it. But expecting those visuals, then I started to look at other things, like Dakota Fanning as the lead. She's a tough one. This came like right in the middle of her run as like...
That's what I'm looking up.
Big
is this at the
like,
middle, or is this near the end?
2007 was Hound Dog. And I think that was like... Not that that's a feel-good movie or anything, but I think that was when people saw, holy shit, this little girl can act, like, legit. So this was 2 years after Hound Dog, and I think the Twilight stuff was kind of sort of the end of
her. Her took a weird turn, because she was doing these studio movies, you know, Uptown Girls, Cat in the Hat, Hide and Seek, War of the Worlds, like these big-time movies, Charlotte's Web, and she was standing out in them. Like, she was going up in these big-budget movies with big-time movie stars. She was acting toe-to-toe with De Niro, with Tom Cruise. Like, she was in all these, and then Hound Dog is what's like, oh, she can carry a movie.
Right.
Like, she can be... And I think everybody expected her to be like, that was in 2007. That's the Dakota Fanning. It's like, oh, this chick's going to win
I think they were
many,
expecting,
many
like,
Oscars.
Jodie Foster from her going forward.
Yeah, and then she did the Twilight movies.
Yeah.
And Push. Yeah, she did The Runaways, but after that, there's not a big movie from her in here. And even the small ones, there's not one that's like Hound Dog to where she's like stuck out. So, I mean, Coraline is pretty much the end. You had The Runaways and Twilight, and then...
And, I mean, Twilight, it was certainly not her movie, and Runaways was more like an ensemble thing, so I wouldn't even say that was necessarily her movie, but... In this, I did not think she was that good.
No,
I mean,
wasn't.
Terry Hatcher, who's not someone I think of...
When I think, hey, good actress.
Well, specifically when I think of voice actresses, she's not top of the list. I mean, she did that Planes stuff that she was in those two movies, and by all accounts did a fine job. I don't know. But Dakota Fanning, again, she's done some cartoon work, I think, when she was even younger. But to be, I think, lapped... by Terry Hatcher in this movie. I was surprised. That didn't occur to me the first time I watched it, but then just listening to some of her deliveries, it seemed uneven. Some lines she was very animated in, and others...
She was very flat in a lot of it.
Yeah, it was flat, and she wasn't really playing two characters. She wasn't playing mother and other mother, So there would be a reason to have some lines go flat.
And where Terry Hatcher, she had more to work with. So, I mean, maybe that's...
She played three characters.
Yeah, so maybe it's not fair to compare to them, but she was flat. Like, yeah. You're carrying this movie.
Yes.
When, I mean, Keith David is a fantastic actor. Ian McShane is a fantastic actor. So when they stand out, it's not necessarily a bad thing, but, like, everybody laps her in this movie, mm-hmm. where... At that point in her career, I would not have expected that. And I get.
Exactly.
Voice acting is way different.
Yes.
Voice acting is a whole other, not everybody can do it.
Right. The, like, best voice actors are not necessarily the best, like, live actors.
And even the best live actors, not all of them can pull
right.
off.
Yeah.
Like, I mean, you look at somebody like Seth Rogen, who makes it flawless. Like, he's a fantastic
voice. Or Idris Elba.
Yeah. Fantastic voice actors, but not everybody is. But. You got to know that going in, especially in this. I feel like this style of animation relies more on the voice actors than your Disney or Pixar, because you can add emotion with, you're more detailed
right.
in the
animation.
If a line's flat, you can add an eyebrow drop. You can
yes.
add something, but this.
Much harder to do in stop motion.
Yeah, no, you're not. And just made the correlation that, yeah, we didn't see much of Dakota Fanning after that.
And I'm not
like,
saying...
Man on Fire, awesome.
Yeah.
I Am Sam, like, stuff like that. Like, Sean Penn, Denzel Washington, like, she was going head-to-head with all these big-time movie stars and crushing it. And then you put her behind a mic, and it was just like...
And I don't think... I
cannot act Terry Hatcher.
No, I don't think that this is what sealed her fate
no,
by any
it's
stretch
not.
Of the imagination.
But it's the...
It's just weird to see the trajectory of her career, and this was certainly on what I would say was still the upward swing. If Hound Dog was the apex in 2007, this is kind of like on the downslope, but nobody had realized that it was the downslope to her yet.
No, and
I
thought...
I mean, the kid's probably, what, 20?
Yeah,
maybe?
And I looked at Elle just to see if, like, oh, maybe we just traded, like, maybe...
Maybe
Dakota
Fanning
was
and
Elle
Fanning are the same person.
Elle kind of broke out with Super 8
yeah.
in 2011. And then since then, we bought Azoo, Ginger and Rosie, Young Ones, Lowdown, Maleficent, like the Box Trolls,
yeah.
Trumbo, About Right, Neon Demon this year. Like, now she's the Fanning those are bigger movies. Maybe there's an age limit on Fannings.
Or they're
know.
They're like Highlanders. There can be only one.
Because I think there's a littler one, too.
I think you might be right. I think she's really young, like maybe 4 or 5.
See, Dakota was 94, so she'd be 22 now.
Okay. 22 is certainly young enough to have a little bit of a resurgence in your career.
I mean, Travolta had one when he was like 80.
Yeah, that's true. He was like 122.
And then Elle was 98, so she's 18. But then, I don't know.
I'm going to edit that creepy look out.
No, I'm just I was trying to do the math in my head about where... 2009, Dakota would have been 15. So I'm trying to think, like, if she'd passed.
If there's a shelf life for Fannings, where, like, once they hit 16, they just go bad.
Yeah, that wasn't
a
creepy
get a new
look.
One.
That was me trying to do math in my head.
which looks the same as your creepy look, just as an FYI. So at the very least, I mean, I like the movie. It's fine. What I appreciated the most about doing this episode was finding that tidbit about Selleck and his two movies being like back to back.
That's more interesting than I think anything. And which is a shame because I like Gaiman. The book is cool.
Yes.
It's hard to transfer.
Very hard to transfer, but his writing, this, Stardust, I mean, even Sandman, I'm kind
of surprised.
Sandman's
one of the best. That they've been trying to get that off the ground for decades.
Yeah, I'm just surprised that it's really sort of taken this long. It seems like they've got every other comic property off and running.
Joey Gordon-Levitt was close to getting it off and ground, but I think he just recently backed out. I think he was like the closest.
The last guy that was really pushing it. Certainly, I think we could see something like that on AMC. If they can make The Preacher, they can certainly do Sandman.
They tried to make Preacher.
That they did. Coraline's a cool movie. It's a fine movie. But I think the stuff surrounding it, the director, Gaiman, seeing what happened to Dakota Fanning after this movie, that's all stuff that I found eminently more interesting than the movie itself. And that may be unfair, but it's just...
Speaking of interesting, I want to play a little game. This is... We'll make it up on the spot.
Oh.
We're going to play Dakota or Elle. I'm going to... Because I was trying to think of fascinating things to learn this episode, so I thought if there was anything fascinating about either one of these, I am going to read...
Fun with the fanning.
I'm going to read a piece of trivia, and you tell me if this is Dakota or Elle is one of 14 grandchildren.
Wait, how could that not be both of them?
That'd be both of them. That was a trick question.
Okay. One for one.
When she attended her first Hollywood premiere, she was only 3.5 years old.
I'm going to go Elle.
That was Elle.
Nice.
Was a member of the Red Cross National Celebrity Cabinet for 1 year.
Dakota.
That's Dakota. Was a Girl Scout.
Dakota.
Yeah. Yeah. Has said she would love to be a director.
L.
That's Dakota.
Damn.
Dressed up as Marilyn Monroe for Halloween.
L.
That is L. Loves to learn her lines in the bathtub at night.
I'm just going to take a pass, a hard pass on this one.
That's L. Plays the piano and the violin, knits, collects dolls, rides horses, and dances ballet.
That's going to take a long time to do all that, so it's probably somebody that's not very busy. I'm going to go Dakota.
Dakota. Her first word was Momo, which was the family's cat name.
I'm going to say Dakota.
That was Dakota.
Are we out of?
I got one more.
Okay.
I'm looking for a good one. Fun fact about both of them. They love to watch Fear Factor. I think that's a little dated.
They love to watch syndicated reruns of Fear Factor. They have it on DVD.
Which one of them always wanted to act, but fancies singing, dancing, and designing clothes?
Dakota.
That's L.
Oh, okay.
And that is...
That's the ultimate slap in the face.
That's the first annual Dakota or L.
Fanning Fan Fest.
Fanning Fan Fest.
So look for that reoccurring.
Yep, I'm going to do that every episode from here on out.
What's the next one that L has coming out?
That Neon Demon's out, but that's...
Oh, okay.
I have no interest in seeing that at all.
All right, yeah, never mind. I thought maybe there was, like, Super 9 coming out.
Super 9?
High 8.
Even that I wouldn't be interested in.
I liked Super 8.
I did not.
I
did like Stranger Things, though.
Maybe we'll have to do an episode on that.
Stranger Things is everything Super 8 wished it could have been.
All right, well, then I'll probably like Stranger Things. Apparently, I do have to see that very quickly. That ought to just about wrap it up for Coraline and our fan fiction. Next week, probably a lot less, I'm guessing, a lot less fanning talk. We're going to be giving our 5 favorite home invasion movies. So let us into your home and your ears for that one. But until then,
keep it up.